miss a beat in today's fast-moving markets. Stay close to the action together with us. All episodes available at www.chartered-investment.com/podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, it is with most appreciation that you found your way to the Chartered Barbecue. Due to two circumstances, A, not only sitting at a barbecue and drinking nice drinks, but also attending a conference like that with almost 40 degrees outside. And I just made a bet to get out of here with my shirt looking exactly the same way as it looks right now. And I will obviously lose. Because indeed, this is crazy. But with my wonderful guests here today, welcome to the Funds in 15 Minutes special on active management and transition, rethinking product innovation, technology, and infrastructure. With two beautiful guests, to my right side is Stefan Wagner, is the head of business development of Vesta. And Dirk Wertmann, the head of SGSS CMS Germany of Société Générale.
I like abbreviations.
That was great, or? Great. Yeah, so I have to admit I wrote it down. So, ladies and gentlemen, before we jump in the usual format of Funds in 50 Minutes, which I think you all know, the famous Chartered Investment podcast, there's a small, let's say, deviation from the natural format that is usually pinned down to 15 minutes and a precise talk on orchestrated questions posed to, let's say, the light towers of the German and international fund industry. I thought myself, maybe I talk for at least a minute before I go into the questions, and I thought of opening this this Funds in 15 Minutes special with a, let's say, deliberately uncomfortable question. And I was told in rhetoric classes it's always good to name a few personalities from the investment industry. So if Bogle told us to buy the haystack, Buffett told most of his investors to buy the S&P 500. Alice called active management, quotation, a loser's game. And Howard Marks says passive won because active was so bad. So why are we still talking about active management? Well, my question, my answer to this would be easy. Because active management is not dead, but it's changing its address. It may no longer live only in the traditional fund wrapper. It may appear in AMCs and active ETFs, in model portfolios, in thematic strategies, in direct indexing, in semi-liquid formats, for instance, et cetera, et cetera. So it's increasingly in the infrastructure layer that makes all of this extremely scalable. So today's the question is not simply active or passive. The real question is, what should be active? The strategy, the wrapper, the distribution model, or the infrastructure? And with all this preliminary remark, let me get into the common format and the first questions to both of you. So what does active management actually means and still means in 2026? And how have investors' expectations actually changed? Dirk?
I can start, of course. Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation. Thank you very much for
a very pleasure.
Very pleasant introduction here. So when talking about active management, I'm just remembering that I was 2 weeks ago participating in a panel from the BVI, the German Fund Association, and there was the topic about funds and especially active ETFs, what you were just mentioning. And they started with a question to the audience, and I would like also maybe to start with a question to the audience, if it's allowed.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, to be an interactive round here on the stage. So the question was, what do you think about the active funds and the active investment wrappers? What is the percentage of these ones globally who are better as they are as their benchmark they are competing. Is it 20%? Is it 50%? Or is it 80%? So who, please raise your hands, who would be for the 20%?
So that's the majority, just for the recording.
That's the majority. 50%? Still there. And who's for 80%? Nobody. So the audience is very sophisticated here, as far as I see, because it's really between, as far as it was told there, 15 and 20%. And the question was then raised, why is there this hype for active ETFs still there? Well, from our perspective, and as you mentioned, SGSS is a kind of service provider. We are not doing any active asset management, but we see it out of the perspective, as I mentioned, from a custodian or from the fund administration. We see that there is today, let's say, not so much the path towards beating the benchmark, but it's really to be more discretionary, that there are some, let's say, investment strategies where you see the combinement of human resources and human judgment with data, technology, as well as disciplined risk management. That means that there's no stiff benchmark, but there is there are some, let's say, deliver-specific targets or outcomes. For example, if there is an ESG target, meet the target, meet, for example, carbonization target, or if there is downside protection from the risk perspective side, that is to be seen as now the investment strategy. You see from the, and you ask about it, what the investors are looking for. What we see is more and more demand of transparency, transparency in the reporting, as down to the single stocks. We see also, of course, the swift from, and this is active, maybe then also the passive management, from the static portfolio towards a dynamic portfolio, with also for ETFs, for example, intraday management and movements in the portfolio. And then on the other side, it's also, of course, the investor, the client itself. They are more and more, and that was in the past, but it's still becoming and increasingly important, they are looking on their fees. And of course, they do not want to pay for any active management if there is no outcome out of this. So therefore, then they will buy beta tomorrow. Mm. That is the perspective out of the service provider.
Would you say that it is, or Stefan, what is your stance on that?
Two things. Because we're on our platform, we have more than 2,500 products that are so claimed to be actively managed. I get into what I have an issue with the word active, by the way. The funny thing is, yes, it's probably the same ratio, 20% can outperform. But the funny thing is the ones who do actually consistently do it, doesn't change around that much. Mm. It's once you find one that actually is good, usually they are actually for a long time good. It doesn't mean that everybody is underperforming at one point. I sort of have a bit of a problem. I think that the market is really a challenge now, what is actually active versus passive. When I think about, what AI can now do, in a sense, yeah, there's something that clearly is very active, can change his opinion, but there's no individual person I can go to and say, you as a human made that decision. And what you said is that clearly what these guys, what the investors want, is customization. They want to express their own views inside it, and that already is for them considered having something actively ordered, tailored, whatever you want. But what matters to them is the transparency. I don't want any more getting my NAV 10 days after the last business day in the top 10 holdings. I want the full transparency. I want also accountability. Who is accountable for the product, no? And who's makes the judgment in it? And I think so. The industry needs slightly new words, like, is it truly rule-based or is it adaptable? Is it transparent or opaque? Mm-hmm. I think that's where the world is. I know legally there's differentiation, particularly when it comes to fees between active and passive, but I think this has become very murky,
Let's take that into a level. Yeah, absolutely.
So frankly speaking, mm-hmm. trust itself is not longer a strategy.
Yeah.
To be said.
Well, it's very philosophical. Yeah, absolutely. Stefan, let's take that momentum okay. and elaborate a little bit more on the product itself, because I think that is already mentioned within this conference already. So plain vanilla question in that regard. So one of your thing is a traditional fund the appropriate wrapper? And when are more flexible forms such as an actively managed certificate are more attractive?
Okay. Traditional fund, let's assume we're talking about UCITS funds.
Yes.
I mean, can we take this as an example? I think it's very appropriate when we need scale. You have the time to collect the money and having all the fun with your KYC and everything else that goes with it. It's liquid. You know, you have a lot of capacity in the market to actually implement that strategy, and you want to do cross-border selling. The other extreme to it is probably the AMC. It's much smaller. You can get into days to the market. You can try things out. It has less regulations. It doesn't have the 5, 10, 40 that you have in a UCITS fund. Mm-hmm. Can be much more tailored and customized. And what the theory also says that the reason why so many active managers underperform is because of the high fees. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now the AMC hopefully helps there by keeping the fees down. I think the actively managed ETF sits roughly half in between. You want the scalability, you want the acceptability in the market and how it is, but it still will take you quite a bit time to market. I don't know if anybody has ever tried to launch a UCITS fund in Luxembourg, the pressure for 7 years, you lose the will to live when you deal with a CSSF.
That's
true.
That's true.
That's obviously not true for Germany because BaFin is very responsive at the moment. So, however,
let's they only go after the journalists. Yeah.
Maybe to add and to summarize
sure,
what you
sure,
just
please,
said.
Please.
So I think the choice of the wrapper nowadays is not really, it's a strategic decision, but it's a strategic decision maybe to the use case itself and to distribution and not so much to the operations itself.
Yeah, the question is more, can you give me access to the right strategy?
And time to market.
Let me give you one polarizing anecdote from a huge fund conference taking place in April each year in Frankfurt. People gathering around there, almost 1,000 people from the industry, they talk about two things. They talk about funds and they talk about fund substitution products. And the fund substitution product is basically, if you're not major enough, then go for an AMC, something like that. So as a follow-up to the initial question, and, you know, would you say that an actively managed certificate is mainly or primarily a testing ground for new strategies, or is that rather a permanently established product where you see no fund substitution?
It's permanent. I'll let you be the judge of it with the following data. We have a platform that is used by more than 20 AMC issuers, used by more than 2,500 asset managers. And longest running AMC on that platform is now getting close to 20 years. And from size-wise, the average size is often much smaller than a fund because you can start smaller. But many are 100 million and the largest is 1.5 billion in AUMs. And we see we start by 50 million, we're going to transfer. No, it's not happening. They're not move. They don't change the vehicle. So in very, very rare cases.
So they rest within the AMC vehicle, right? Okay, understood. Active ETFs, AMCs, ETPs, et cetera, so what we feel is like a huge range of product diversity in recent days. And Derek, particularly in your direction as, let's say, the backbone of the administrative reasoning of all that, what would you say on the demands and what demands actually this growing diversity of product places on the depositories, on the services, on the administrators?
Yeah, you mentioned it. We can see an explosion of wrappers and different wrappers coming up and popping up in the markets, as well as asset classes, of course. And they drive really this structural, I would say, complexity. And this complexity, of course, drives the operational demands behind us, the operational demands given by us, as well as, you know, the exchanges and all the others, the central counterparties, the CSDs in the world. They have all to change and to adapt to this diversity of wrappers. So the operational demands, what does it come from? Comes from the multi-servicing, multi-wrapper servicing part. We are serving ETFs, we talked about it. We are talking about normal funds. We are talking about AMCs. We are talking, that was where I was visiting yesterday in a panel, about LTIFs. LTIFs, the new one, I don't know if everybody knows, the European Long-Term Investment Fund, which now combines, and this is the other factor which is driving the complexity, the different asset classes. So in the LTIF, you are combining or trying to combine at least the former private market part, as well as the liquid part now from the UCITS. So this has to then also to be combined. So that as a service provider, you have to also provide then, of course, the backbone for those asset classes. And of course, we have to become faster. The market has to become faster. You talked about time to market. This is the most crucial thing as far as we see it. You saw it. I don't know how long did it take to open the fund in Luxembourg? Was it 7 years?
No, it was 7 months. But okay. No. In between, the CSF went on summer holidays. Yeah. I mean, we had launched multiple ones, but it's rather. Oh, but even the most extreme case. I mean, if you have 2 minutes,
sure.
Absolutely. So you know, you have to usually go and bring all the KYC information to the custodian with all the, you know, utility bills not 3 months older and everything else. One of the investors was unfortunately just over that by the time they looked at it. They sent us home with every information, said come in 1 month back. By then, obviously, half the other utility bills were not older than 3 months. Guess how many AUL is lost thanks to that? Because they said, no, we're not doing this again.
Of course, then, just to add it, what I just mentioned, we have also to look at different regulations and to cover different regulations, not only in the different jurisdictions, but also the regulations covering the different wrappers themselves. Mm-hmm. We have got the KGB, we have got the KVG, and all those different topics we have to fulfill then from a regulatory point of view as a service provider. Then, of course, I think this is something we will come also along later on, technological demand.
Yes, absolutely.
And this also leads then, of course, and this is also a very important topic for us, risk and oversight. Mm-hmm. Risk and oversight coming from regulatory implications, but also coming from, let's say, valuation challenges. What is the role of the Verwahrstelle, when you put it in this way? It's normally it's controlling, but the role of the Depot Bank, of the trustee, of the Verwahrstelle becomes more and more part of the front office part of the structuring of the product itself or the wrapper itself, because if they cannot settle it, if they cannot custodian this one and cannot serve this, all the fancy strategies, they cannot be brought to the market.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, up until here, we already rethought innovation in a certain sense, and we already rethought infrastructure in a certain sense from this monstrous episode title. What is actually missing, and Dirk, you've already you touched upon it, is let's talk about a little bit of technological developments. And what are your proposition, in which areas is digitalization in a certain sense, already delivering genuine scalability and efficiency today?
So for us, digitalization is, of course, in the whole to be seen in the connection of the whole value chain, starting from, let's say, trade capture to fund administration to settlement to reconciliation. That is something where without digitalization, but then also coming to the core point, data delivery, golden source for all the different, golden source of data for all the different parts within the value chain. I think this is the essential part, and that is where digitalization helps us to streamline the different data we receive in one, let's say, golden source, golden pot, and to help us then to streamline our processes. We have also, of course, you mentioned it and we mentioned it, KYC process. KYC process is very much helped and supported by AI nowadays with us to help and to streamline and to really to downsize the KYC process itself. We even expanded this one to the so-called client journey. We have got different tools for our institutional clients, which help on reporting sites where they can really also then communicate with the help of digital tools towards us and between ourselves streamlining the process, understanding the client, but also the client understanding us better with those things. And then, of course, what is also very important, and this is coming back to what I just mentioned, the role of the Verwahrstelle, but of I think of everybody in the value chain. Digitalization helps also building up partnerships, external partnerships. So what we, for example, have, this is called SGSS as a service, where, for example, for ESG services, we combine different partners out of the ESG world, like, I don't know, Clarity, Greenscale, Tumulus, and so on. They go via one explicit tool, platform provided by us, and they can choose, the client can choose the different let's say, services provided by the different partners. And that is changing the role. The Verwahrstelle itself cannot and will not bring and provide all the different services, but we rely more and more on partnerships. That means our role becomes also a little bit outsourcing, controlling, governance of partnership structures. This is something where I see the big impact on AI itself. We mentioned it, just touched it, which will support especially the settlement part for the whole market is T+1, which will be introduced October next year. We are already working on it, of course, like everybody is, more or less. And so this will also not only help us, but force us to introduce more and more AI just to meet those halved settlement cycles from T+2 to T+1.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. So we are slowly approaching the end of our session already, but there's no funds in 50 minutes without a little bit of crystal balling, as you might know. And that crystal balling in your direction, Stefan, looking ahead to 2030.
Okay.
What will change most significantly? Is it the investment strategy, the product wrapper, or the underlying infrastructure? What still stands?
If I could predict the market that well, you know, we would be both on my private jet to Hawaii.
Let's talk afterwards.
Okay, we'll talk.
All right.
But joking aside, I think what will happen more and more, the wrapper will probably become pretty much irrelevant. It will be the digitization and market, the standardization of the data that flows everywhere through from literally the product provider to the custodian to the exchanges to whatever AI, ESG ratings and everything else. And it will be more a question, you know, if I come as an investor to you, say, can you get me access to the strategy that I want with my values implemented and not the outrageously cost that maybe only, you know, family offices or high net worth individuals were able to do. I think we're seeing this very clearly that because it's such random thing, we find incredible things on our platform that people now invest in. We have one, for example, that invests in jumping horses. Yeah? They get bought, trade for 18 months and sold off, you know what I mean? There's so much alternatives that you can now get to. And you know, if it's well sold and disclosed and transparent, I think it's a great opportunity because I'm getting slightly bored of a market that's just a momentum index on 7 stocks.
Absolutely. Dirk, anything to add on this?
Well, definitely I would opt for the infrastructure. This will evolve and will have the most impact on all those topics because, as I mentioned, digitalization, of course, is happening on the infrastructure side. What is needed with the different, you mentioned it, wrappers don't care about it so much, but you need, since you have it still, you need interoperability between all those different platforms serving the different wrappers or what will evolve.
It's a data standardization.
It's a data standardization. So therefore, I would say definitely it's the infrastructure, which has then, of course, impact on strategy as well as impact on the wrappers and itself. Yeah. So this is my personal opinion.
Perfect, perfect. Let me try at the very end to somehow close the circle in on this episode. So we started with this old polarizing debate, active versus passive, alpha versus beta, conviction versus cost. But perhaps the better answer is that markets and investors need in that respect both. So passive investing has forced the industry to become cheaper. Simple answer is that markets and investors need both. Passive investing has also forced the industry to and more transparent. Active management at its best, at judgment in a certain sense, innovation and willingness to be different. So the real question is no longer whether that active management survives in a certain sense. If we stay with this distinction between active and passive, but the question actually is where it creates value, and is it in the strategy and the wrapper or in the infrastructure that makes all that scalable? So far, so good. Dirk, Stefan?
Yes?
It has been my absolutely pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
On this almost 50 degrees right over here. So, ladies and gentlemen, it was a pleasure to have you with our first live Fifth Funds in 50 Minutes podcast. Thank you very much.
This podcast is for informational purposes only. The content discussed does not constitute investment advice, a recommendation or an offer to buy or sell units or shares in investment funds. Please make investment decisions solely on the basis of the official offering documents.